Welcome to the wrestling podcast that's not just for wrestling fans. This is Smark and Friends on the Two Finger Guns Club Network. My name is Zach and I'll be your host. It's a wrestling watch along with an uninitiated fan once again on today's podcast. And friends, I'm recording this intro after recording the episode itself, and I must admit, I'm a little drunk. I often enjoy an adult beverage with my guest, but I was drinking outside of my pallet house today with a bottle of wine recommended by my guest. She's a business manager, a performance artist, an opera metal singer, and so much more. I'm speaking with the author of the 9 Ounces Please wine blog, Maroki Tong. I've been friends and colleagues with Maroki for a long while, and I'm really excited to have her on the podcast. We talk about wine, a subject I know very little about, and wrestling, a subject she knows very little about. And you know what? Surprisingly, there's a lot of overlap between wrestling fans and wine circles that we explore on this episode before we jump into a Smark and Friends patented wrestling watch-along. So cue up YouTube. We'll let you know what match we're watching after these messages.
Recording. That's right. That theme means the return of the Two Finger Guns Club presents 28 and 28, a challenge to release one podcast a day for the month of February. Here are some creative and new ideas from host of Smark and Friends, Rocketman Explorers, and Foulmouth. We're even throwing in a couple of one-offs so you don't have to go a day without us. Catch TFGC Presents 28 and 28 wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and follow Two Finger Guns Club on social media to stay up to date on the latest releases.
And we're back. Today's guest, I could introduce her in many different ways with many different titles, but today we're going to be talking about her wine blog. So I'm going to be introducing her as the wine blogger behind 9 Ounces Please, Maroki Tong. Maroki, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Zach. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here and a little bit nervous.
Again, nothing to be nervous about. Like I'm even coming back from the holidays, like when it comes to the podcast, and I don't feel like warmed up. So even my voice, I kind of find my voice like wavers here and there. And that's like a manifestation of very unnecessary or nervous energy. But, you know, here we are.
I'm waiting to let the world know just how poor I am in the world of wrestling and how lack of knowledge I have in the world of wrestling.
For one thing, like that makes you an ideal guest on this show. We love talking to people who aren't really involved in the wrestling fandom. And at the same time, I'm going to be speaking to you about wine, which I know absolutely nothing about. I think we're both going to learn something, and I'm very excited for that.
Yes, yes. Well, my partner is super excited that I'm here because, as you know, Eric is a huge wrestling fan. And
absolutely.
I basically got my very limited wrestling knowledge through osmosis through him and his friend who really loves wrestling too. So they have like the rest, they used to back when we were all allowed, have wrestling watch parties. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like my very limited experience, but I've been entertained. I guess that's a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
I also went to a taco restaurant in San Diego that was wrestling themed.
That is amazing.
Yes.
Actually, here in Montreal, I want to say like 2-3 years ago, they did a taco fest, but also like my favorite independent wrestling promotion got involved, IWS. So it was tacos and wrestling. It was just wonderful.
This was like full like luchador style, like, and they had, you know, all, and I think they had a whole bunch of, you know, old school wrestling stars, like their photos, their autographs on the wall. They had like a VIP booth that actually was like a wrestling ring, and you get to sit in it if you rent the VIP spot. And the tacos were delicious. They were like authentic, you know, like San Diego is where you would want to get some incredible Mexican food. So yes.
Awesome. I must keep that in mind for next time I'm traveling abroad. When we can all travel again. I actually had a bit of a struggle preparing for this podcast. Usually like when I'm having someone on, I have like some, you know, even like a cursory knowledge about what they do to talk about that project and whatnot. I didn't know where to begin when it comes to like questions for a wine blogger that didn't sound so like vapid and but you know, we're going to give it a go. So again, like you work in a really wide variety of fields. Like you're a business manager, or should I say business administrator?
I'm a business manager. I'm a general manager, white labeled. My official title, because I am a freelance contractor, is I'm a strategic management consultant.
Okay.
And I either do pocket consulting contracts for some of my clients or some of my longer term clients. I'm on retainer and I'm white labeled as their business manager or their general manager.
Gotcha. And on top of that, of course, like performing arts, acting, yes. opera metal, which is yes. the coolest thing I've ever heard.
my EP that had lofty goals of being released in the spring and summer of 2020, that came to an abrupt halt thanks to the world ending 1.0.
Naturally.
So yes, but I am an opera metal singer and composer. I'm a recovering actor. I did it for 10 plus years. And then I still sort of moonlight it now and again, but obviously the bread and butter now comes from me going and getting my fancy MBA and going into business and, you know, producing other people. Like it was great. Like a trend, you know, it was almost because I did a lot of producing work on top of my performance life, and I found and ran an arts festival dedicated to alternative arts and culture. So like comics, science fiction, fantasy, all the geeky stuff. And so I kind of took that into my business world because a lot of my clients tend to be entrepreneurs themselves, solopreneurs, media personalities. And so, you know, as they like to say it, I produce them.
On top of all these spinning plates, you've added wine blog on top of all of them. Like, why did you decide to start up 9 Ounces, Please?
So I actually have had a huge passion for wine since I was 19. There was just one day I decided, you know, you talk about the vapid thing, but it was one day I like sat in my bedroom. I was in my final year of university and I decided, you know what? I'm going to understand wine. I'm going to be classy, and I'm sitting there with a bottle of Yellowtail. And for anyone who's, you know, not super familiar with wine, they might be familiar with Yellowtail. It's a huge, huge brand from Australia, but it's definitely like a mass market brand. Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, it's the $9 bottle, and I'm sitting there and I'm like sniffing and I'm like, I smell things. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. And I was like, I don't know. I just decided I was going to be really interested in it. And then I started, you know, and I'm a foodie. I love food. I love wine. I just love experiences. So, you know, visiting wineries or attending food and wine festivals, because, you know, what is a broke actor to do and get free food, but to volunteer for a food and wine festival so I can eat the free food there. But I got chatting with a lot of winemakers, and I just loved hearing the process, the amount of work, the amount of craftsmanship that actually goes into a glass. Like all we see is this final liquid, right? But there's agriculture behind winemaking. You're literally growing acres and acres of grapes in a vineyard, and in Ontario, nonetheless, like, you know, the places that are warm and tropical, like they kind of have it easy, right? California and Mediterranean places like Italy. But in Canada, like we have to deal with winter that just kills everything. And then, you know, you take it, you have to harvest it, you have to press it, and then you have to ferment it. And during the fermentation process, there's so much risk of things going wrong, right? Like bacteria can go in, it can go sour. It's like making beautiful food, or it's like anything, right? Things can go wrong. And there's just so many steps in the process. And somehow you end up with like a bottle of this like really lovely beverage. And most of it is at pretty affordable prices, which is incredible. So I really, you know, I studied it. There's the agriculture of it. And just over 10 years of just like self-learning, self-study, visiting wineries, talking to people, I just accumulated this knowledge. And I always dreamed of doing something with wine as well. I was like, oh, someday when I have free time, I'm going to do stuff with wine. Free time never happened. But also COVID happened. So, you know, when my music dried up and I was kind of feeling a little bit of a creative void, I thought maybe this is the side project I can do for myself. And so I just kind of, you know, bit the bullet and launched 9 Ounces, Please. And yeah, and it's taken off rather incredibly, I think, since then. It's actually amazing how much growth it has had, the welcomeness of the community, how much I've personally learned, and just some of the activations I've been a part of to kind of share, make wine accessible to everyone. You know, you talk about how Smark and Friends is a little bit about like, you can be a wrestling fan. You don't need to be a wrestling fan to enjoy being listening to this podcast or being on it. I try to be similar. Like, I'm like, yes, I can be really nerdy about wine. And I've definitely had my like sister rolling her eyes at me and being like, shut up, like stop talking about what land this grape grows in and just eat dinner and drink the damn wine. But I try and also want to make it really accessible, right? Like as you very kindly noted today, right? Like I you reached, when you were like, oh, Maruki, we're going to drink wine tonight. Like, what do you want me to buy? Right. So,
yeah. So it kind of like serves as the blog serves as a bit of like an entry point for the blind lifestyle. Is that an appropriate use of the term?
Yeah, maybe. Like wine is, can be so many different things. Like it can be super academic, right? Like if you talk to some really, really skilled sommeliers out there, you know, they'll sit there and smell a wine and be like, da 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 da, it's from this really specific region in Australia, it's from this grape, it's this wine from this year. And you're like, whoa, like sorcery just happened. That's how exact and how precise some of these experts are in their wine. And then you get people who are just like, Friday night, chug my bottle, it's so good, right? And, you know, and it's like any hobby or any passion that people get into, there's different tiers or different directions that people can go in. And I'd like to think I try and straddle a little bit the, hey, I'm totally a geek and I'm always willing to learn more and you can teach me all the academic styles. Like one time I jumped down a rabbit hole about how to grow a grapevine, specifically like how to, you know, train your grapevine to grow like up in this way. It was really geeky. Or I can just talk about like, hey, like Maruki, I'm making my salmon with honey garlic sauce. What kind of wine I should pair with it? Just tell me. Or hey, like this is something I got a lot throughout most of my life, right? Just from people knowing that I nerded a lot about wine. I get texts from people actually. I worked in a, if you want to talk about spinning plates, there was a brief stint where I worked for a condo developer and I would get texts from my fellow real estate agent friends who would be like, Maruki, like under $20. Two reds, two whites. I got impressed at a party. And I'm sitting there being like, nee. I'm like, which LCBO are you at? Stop. So, you know, I try and make it really fun for people too, right?
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. You just described like you're essentially like the Q of like of James Bond's Q to wine. Like that's amazing. Like just call up, you need a wine. Maruki will gadget her way into finding you a good one.
Yeah, just my own Maruki person. I should get like get an app made. 9 ounces, please. Just like, oh, sorry. What is a bottle of wine where you can justify the 9 ounce pour?
Now, speaking of like wine recommendations, you actually recommended this one to me. I decided mm-hmm. that speaking to a wine blogger, it would be appropriate that I pick up some wine for this podcast. So what can you tell me about this one? Villa, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, so please excuse me. Villa Regia.
Yeah.
Oh, I did it? Oh, hey, cool.
Yeah, so the one I recommended to you is a really great value wine. So people who are looking for that under 10, like, killer wine, first of all, most wines from Portugal will always offer a killer value. They're really beginning to kind of make in the world of wine now, but even then, you know, Italy had, like, when people hear wine from Italy, they're like, oh, yes, wine from Italy, right? But if you hear wines from, like, Portugal, from Greece, I'm trying to think like from Hungary. I mean, like a lot of the, now that I say this, but a lot of the wines actually that are imported from Hungary are quite premium over here just simply because they don't have that much to export. So only the really premium stuff ends up going out. But, you know, they're still considered emerging regions and they also just have higher production. So it's easy to get a great bottle of wine at a lower price point. Villa Regia, the Douro that you have, Douro is the region in Portugal that it is from. And The company is actually called So Grape, and they're really large companies. So they do a mixture of kind of producing their own in-house wine. And I think this Villa Regia Douro is actually considered one of their in-house brands, but they actually represent other brands as well to try and like export into the world market. So they're a really huge company. This is considered, I think, more or less what they call like a mass market wine. Some people, they want to call it something less flattering. They call it warehouse wine. I don't really want to call things that because, you know, then you create like a subjective opinion on it and it can kind of change what, you know, what people view as a wine. And it shouldn't be like that, right? So I remember picking up this bottle many, many years ago. Like I think I first tried it in 2013 and I literally was, you know, like I said, peak broke artist. And I was like, need wine that's good. Yeah. Doesn't break my wallet. And this one, one reviewer actually said like this wine competes with wines that are maybe 20, 30, like not 30, but like in the $20 range for some other regions or brands. So I picked it up and I've had many, like, cause it's, you know, obviously the vintage changes every year. You know, at that time I probably had like a 2012 and now this is, I think, the 2019 that you have there. it's changed a little bit, but it's so reliable. It's so good for the price point. And so whenever people are like looking for a very thrifty value wine that still delivers good flavor, I try to recommend this one. But maybe before I tout it too much, you should tell me what you think of it. Because if you hate it, then I didn't recommend that to you at all.
No, I'm enjoying it. You know, like, I feel like that, like the sketch from this moment from The Office where Andy's saying, this painting is good. This painting is good. That's pretty much all I can really say. Like, I'm not so good with the adjectives when it comes to the beverages I'm enjoying.
Should I be like, what do you smell, Zach?
What do I smell? I smell wine.
What does the bottle tell you? I'd like to hear what the back of the bottle is. I'm pretty sure they usually tell you there's something about it.
Yeah, okay. Towns founded by kings were designated as Villa Regia, royal town. This noble Douro wine echoes that unique and rich heritage. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, they don't tell you any of the flavor profiles?
Oh, okay. No, we got like complexity, tannins, body. Okay. I'm reading the bottom language and I was like getting confused, like corpse. And it's like, no, body. It's got a flavor profile. Okay. Yeah. It pairs nice with game, with seafood, with turkey, beef. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, so it doesn't say like nose of cherries and berries or taste like?
No. Not really. It's got maybe I'm missing it. It's got like these little bars underneath, like underneath it where it says fruit. It's got like four dots out of five.
No, I guess it was trying to tell it's fruity. I mean, they change their labels all the time, right? I remember when I first bought it, one of the reasons why it tickled my fancy was back, you know, they obviously change their marketing labels every year, but that one year it was like, oh, it has hints of coconut in it. And I was like, really? I have to get it and find out whether it has coconut in it because that's crazy. But
that sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, no, it is. There's a few wines that kind of bring out tropical flavor. It's rare in a red, right? Whites usually offer more tropical fruit notes. So, but typical notes that you find in, you know, red wines, like cherries, always like a good one, you know, berries, blackberries, blueberries, all that, you know, fun stuff. Especially with like a good, with a solid table wine, you probably will find those dominating notes. Obviously, there's a whole plethora of other variations that can go into coffee and earthiness and la la la. And I'm sure if as I talk about this, the Somali people are like smashing their hands on the table being like, you're describing everything wrong. Because I should say that, like I said, everything I've done is a lot of self-study. I'd love to get a certification. I just don't have the time. But, you know, if there's any time where I should comment why sometimes maybe wine feels inaccessible to some people, you know, you do kind of have sometimes run-ins where people will maybe shut you down for your lack of knowledge, right? They're like, there definitely are segments of people out there who'd be like, you know nothing about wine because do you have this and this? And you're describing the nose wrong and the flavor wrong. I'm like, dude, it's just wine, man. Like,
I think you find that like in a lot of fandom groups. I mean, like even wrestling fans have this, like, I think there's this misconception that your subjective opinion is worth objective fact. And it's like, you know, I can like something that not everyone else likes. That doesn't make me wrong. It's just like, I just like something different. Like, chill out, people. No big deal.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said, like, I like academia, but also if someone just wants to know what's a good, you know, sub $10 wine to grab that night, I can point that out for you. And if you just love it the way it is, you don't need to dig into the notes, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. And I am enjoying this as it is. This is wonderful. That's
good. Should I be telling you about my wine too before we move on, just so that I'm not left out?
Oh, you're not drinking the Villa Regia. Okay, what are you drinking?
I'm not. So I'm doing the, like, I love my Ontario wine. So I support a lot of Ontario wine. So I decided tonight to open this bottle of Trainer Pinot Noir. It's from Prince Edward County, which is like a sister region to Niagara. It's lesser known, but also becoming quite popular, younger sister, which does phenomenal cool climate wines. They, you know, they kind of have one of the harshest climates in the region. Like, they have to bury their vines in the winter because it just gets so freaking cold. But, you know, they've been up and coming for a long time. They're very much like Niagara will always have a very known place in a lot of people's hearts. But Prince Edward County is coming very close. Like, it's coming up. There's just so many wineries there that are amazing. They're doing some great production there. What I really find cool about Trainers, they're super experimental. Like, if you want wines that don't look like wine, Like, they just have these incredible jewel tones. Like, whenever I go on their website, it's like, oh, it's like shiny artist rainbow. They have these wines that are just these bright oranges and these bright, like, yellows, because they do skin contact. They do, like, you know, what, like, all these ferments that are just, like, wild, or they just really experiment and do different things. And so I find their stuff really, really cool. So I'm drinking their Pinot Noir tonight. Yeah.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice. Now, you touched upon it at the beginning that you don't really know too much about wrestling. Let's just like explore that a little bit more before we jump into our watch along. Well, you kind of talked about like how you kind of like watch it with groups of friends and whatnot. Any like other kind of peripheral references to wrestling from your life?
So from my like very early days of watching wrestling with Eric, I definitely remember watching, and I cannot remember his first name, but Nakamura.
Shinsuke.
Shinsuke. He had like this one entry where he had like a violent virtuoso, and then it was just like this very long entrance. He's coming in. I think he's wearing red, and he's just posing constantly, ignoring all the posing. I was like, this song is bonkers. It's amazing. I would listen to it if, you know, I didn't, you know, quite imagine the back of my head that there's a dude like posing and postulating the entire time. I was actually sad because I saw some of his other entrances and they weren't as like oomphy. There was one where it just looked like a whole bunch of like girls were dancing on strip poles, and I was like, eh, not as cool. But I know that. I know, what's her name? Ronda Rousey. She's like the one character in Mandalorian, which I loved until she kind of like turned out to be a Trump supporter, right wing.
Not that Ronda Rousey isn't, but wasn't it? It was Gina Carano. Gina, someone else who was in Mandalorian. Was
it her who turned out? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like it was another MMA fighter. Now I'm blanking on the name.
Google this really
quickly
so we fact check ourselves. Okay.
Yeah. Gina Carano. She played, now I'm going to have to Google the character name.
Apparently she did go on a right wing rant about
liberals. Yeah. I mean, Ronda Rousey isn't really much better when it comes to that kind of thing, but Gina Carano, the Mandalorian fans wanted to write her out of the show. Cara Dune. That was the character's name on Mando.
Yeah, that's not cool. And then I learned, I think, like, very recently that The Undertaker, who, you know, I know strictly because of his character, like, name and persona, apparently also went quite off the deep end on the right wing kind of pro-Trump stuff, which just I don't abide by.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I feel like my uncle that I've been looking up to most of my life just turns out to be just, like, a disappointment. I think like a lot of it because like Undertaker was kind of protecting his character for so many years, and he didn't really let the Mark Calloway into the public limelight. And now that he is retired from wrestling, he's being a little more boisterous in his right leanings, which is very disappointing and difficult to watch, truth be told.
Yeah, I think like sometimes that's where from what I've seen of wrestling, I think the history of wrestling, like some industries that are maybe have his roots of being very machismo like and very testosterone driven also maybe have not been very progressive in terms of like bringing in women or you know maybe like kind of just being more open in terms of racial tolerance and acceptance. I'm watching it, clearly there's been strides. I think there's some really great characters now there's always talks about like, you know, like I think they have like a whole women's division and everything in wrestling, right? And I think people are having more talks about it, but obviously there's a lot of change that needs to be made, right? Wine actually isn't that much different than that. Like there's a lot of commentary about wine is like an old white man's world. And there's so much talk about like quite open misogyny that happens in the world of wine and the racism that happens in wines and the lack of diversity in wines and that wine sometimes is considered colonial because it's kind of predominantly Eurocentric and European driven in how they describe wines. There's actually stories of, Filipinos, like Somalis in training stuff, and they'll say, oh, this wine smells like papaya or it'll smell like passion fruit or tastes like passion fruit. And they will get like laughed out of class because they're using a fruit that's like exotic and weird and not on like the little circle chart that they have.
Okay.
You know, I'm kind of very cognizant of these things about any industry that I'm like participating in. And I've sort of, I see that a little bit in wrestling.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very good point. I think there's a lot of moral concessions, like regardless of like where your fandom or like what kind of lifestyle, for lack of a better word, fandom. It's really good that we can be aware of these things. And I'm glad that like these conversations are happening in these different circles, such as the wine circle and such as the wrestling circle. And you're absolutely right. You're completely astute in your observation about wrestling. Like they've made great strides in the last like 10 years. When you look at like the Attitude Era, which was just like completely sexualized and, you know, like women weren't really given a chance to wrestle and whatnot. But now like they're stealing the show. Like they're putting on better matches than guys because they finally have a chance to give it a try. Mm-hmm. I've given a lot of thought about moral concessions. Cause like, I feel like if you're a fan of any billion-dollar industry, you have to have some sort of like cognitive dissonance, but like if you can have the conversation, then you're aware and you're moving towards making that thing a better place.
Dare I ask this question? What did you think about WWE like wanting to continue wrestling shows and stuff right in the midst of the pandemic?
I have not supported WWE for a very long time. There's another company that is continuing through the pandemic called AEW. Again, like I think they're putting on great shows, but I haven't been able to watch any new wrestling in about a year and a half. I've been kind of like digging deep in archives of stuff I haven't really seen before. Mm-hmm. It's not a decision I support. I don't think they should be doing it. Right now, their WWE champion just tested positive for COVID-19.
Oh.
Fortunately, he's asymptomatic, but Drew McIntyre is like been off TV while they're building to one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year. So they shouldn't be doing it. I've said so out loud, but you know, I'm just a podcaster from Montreal. I don't think they're going to be calling me up and asking my opinion anytime soon.
No, but like, it's important because, and you know what, like you say that, but I believe everyone's voice, like you don't need a huge platform to have a voice. Because if a lot of people didn't have those voices, it wouldn't help lift up maybe someone who would say something about it. Everyone feels those things. Just because someone's not talking about it doesn't mean that they aren't having an experience about it. I actually made a blog post quite recently due to the events that happened right at the start of this year.
I remember that one.
I just made a post about just, you know, saying like there's, you know, just what happened in the States kind of, and how the authorities handled it just indicated the lack of equality that still exists with, you know, a lot of minorities, you know, especially if you make some direct comparisons to what happened in June. And I just sort of said, you know what, we're all here to talk about wine. I get it. We all want to have fun. But here's some experiences happened to me as an Asian woman in wine, just putting it out there. And I'm not going to abide by abuse. I'm not going to abide by abusive behavior. And I'm not going to abide by passive aggressiveness or anything, you know, like anything that makes people tear each other down. It's just, I don't stand by it. You know, if you do that to my friends or do it to, you know, if you talk about some sort of really systemic issue in that way, like doesn't fly with me.
Very well said. Now, Marohi, like this went in a direction we don't usually go in on Smirk and Friends. I will never shy away from these conversations. So I'm really glad that you brought it up. But this is still a light spirited podcast, and I'm not really sure how to segue us back into the tone other than, hey, should I put on some wrestling?
I mean, you absolutely can. First of all, it's your podcast, so we can go in any direction that you want. And I did say I didn't want to dive too deeply into this when we signed in together. I do want us to have fun.
No, we're still going to have fun. And again, it's good to be engaged in these conversations and whatnot.
Shall we watch some wrestling?
We shall watch some wrestling. Let me tell you actually a little bit about the match we're about to watch. This is actually a matchup between two competitors of a very similar style. Both have a technical prowess, but both have hints of a power game, and they both even have the same first name. The Riot, Nicole Matthews, defends her women's championship against the queen of suplexes, Nicole Savoy, in Elite Canadian Championship Wrestling. Normally when I welcome guests for these uninitiated watch-alongs, I try to find something that kind of like vibes with what my guest is promoting. The only tie-in I actually have for this, Marohi, is that Nicole Matthews is the only wrestler I've ever seen who actually has wine glasses in their merch catalog. So it's only a little bit to work with, but it's plenty to work with, and it's going to be a great match that we're about to watch.
If I knew that, I would have bought the glasses in advance and poured my wine in it.
We'll put the links in the description so people are going to be able to pick them up afterwards as well. So,
all right, they should send us 2% for every glass they sell, right?
I mean, I won't say no. Anyone who's listening to the podcast, if you want to watch along with us at home, and I hope you do, just head over to YouTube and find Nicole Matthews versus Nicole Savoy on ECCW Entertainment's official YouTube channel. Pause this podcast and come back to us. Are you ready? Good. We're going to click play on go. Are you ready, Maroki?
I think so. I'm as ready as I can be.
Excellent. 3, 2, 1, go. And clearly, as per the name of the company, this is a Canadian wrestling company.
All right.
Out in British Columbia.
Represent for Canada land.
And first coming to the ring is the champion herself, Nicole Matthews.
So which one's the suplex one?
That's going to be her opponent.
Okay. Okay, there's a lot of plaid. That's very Canadian.
Very Canadian. She's the one with the wine glass merch.
Ah, okay, okay.
Yeah.
This is one thing I actually do appreciate about, I should have made a commentary about female wrestling. They're definitely not sexualizing their outfits as much anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, that's really important towards like the optics.
There actually was this woman I met at like a, she like worked at a spa or something, and she actually was like an amateur wrestler and was hard, and like every weekend she would drive like 15 hours into the States and do a tournament and come back.
Wow.
Yeah, she was like hardcore. It was like peak performer style life, right? Like driving all over the States, like road tripping down, doing a match. And I actually remember following her on Facebook, and I looked at her costumes and I was like, man, that's very little clothes to be wrestling in. And I remember feeling like I had some personal opinions about that. So this is practical. You can wrestle better in these clothes.
And like, there's still those kind of like, very sexualized characters. You know, I'd say both in both men and women, but certainly like leaning more so towards women. But yeah, like we're certainly evolving in that regard too. Women's wrestling is.
Do you think men are like sexualized though, or is it just because they're wearing Speedos, which a lot of men already wear?
I mean, it's certainly tilts towards women.
We said we would not talk like this, and here am I.
No. I'm glad you brought it up. Like, it's certainly a different kind. Like, it's far less exploitative when they sexualize the men, because usually it'll be like a porn star gimmick, which is done for laughs and you know, whatever. You know, sexualizing the women in wrestling is like a very different light. Yeah. So, I certainly misspoke.
And you know what? Like, I should also say, like, I have really nothing wrong with a woman wanting to be sexual. Right? Like,
no, for sure.
Like, that's a very powerful thing for women to have. You know, one of the things we never said, I do circus aerials on the side. That's something I do. I have a lot of friends in the circus community, fire community, burlesque community, the fetish community. And, you know, I think there's like definitely a beauty into loving yourself, your body, your sexuality. So like, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm very all for that. But that's not the same as, you know, as you described, kind of using as an exploitative thing or objectifying it. Where maybe necessarily the women aren't necessarily empowered to do it, but maybe it's demanded of them for branding and for marketing and stuff.
Yeah. But this, we're actually just getting some straight up wrestling at the start of the bell. Nicole Savoy has gotten Nicole Matthews in a takedown, and now Nicole Matthews has a hammerlock on Nicole Savoy. It's going to be hard for me to call two Nicoles in a match. I think I'm going to lose track here and there.
I'm going to say like Matthews versus Savoy. I think I can handle that.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I'll give that a go. With long hair, I don't know how they're fighting with their hair down. Like, that just seems, I just feel like I'd lose half my hair by the end of the match.
like my hair's like not long at all, but like, you know, sometimes I have long hair, and like even just rolling out of bed, I feel like my hair's just like getting in the way.
My hair. Sometimes I'll like flop on the couch and be like, ugh. I can't, like, because my hair's gone to that length. So when I just see them like rolling around their hair, I'm like, oh God, my scalp, it's in pain.
I wonder what their secret is.
Probably none. Probably just a high pain tolerance, which I think is just something that wrestlers have.
Certainly. Matthews has taken a breather on the outside. Her manager, Cassidy, is fanning her down. Oh, but she's back to the outside. No, she's still taking a breather.
I'm still trying to remember, like, when does it consider out of bounds? You have to, like, willingly leave it yourself for it to be okay, right?
What do you mean?
Like, if you just walk out of the ring yourself, it's not a penalty. It's okay to kind of stay out of that. But if someone tosses you out of the ring, does that count for something?
You have, like, if you're outside of the ring, you have 10 seconds to get back into the ring, generally.
Oh, okay. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So, like, you can still leave on your own volition and you'll still be counted. But, you know, sometimes it's right. A strategic move to go outside and get a breather and while your opponent is left to just wander.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh, nice arm bar there by Savoy.
That one I know because Eric does jiu-jitsu. So arm bars is something I see. I used to do judo. I used to be a competitive judo athlete, too. So
what haven't you done?
I don't play soccer.
Matthew's back to the outside. Referee Audrey Edwards exercising the 10 count. She's strategizing with Cassidy, who's climbing up on the apron now.
I just turn up the volume a touch so I can see what they see if I understand.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Oh.
And again, Matthew's to the outside. Savoy with a big dive. Oh, geez. Right into the front row.
Right into the splash zone.
I have been to so many wrestling shows. I have been to so many front rows. I never get dived on by any of the wrestlers. Like, I feel like I'm just, like, not a target.
Do you want to, though? Like, is that a thing?
I mean, like, you know, it's like going to a punk rock show. You want someone to stage dive and you want to, like, help them crowd surf. It's fun. It's part of the experience.
I don't, as a 5'1 female, I've definitely gone to metal shows and they start mosh pits and I usually tend to avoid it. I think the closest the most intense splash zone experience I've ever had was actually, so I went to Vegas a couple years ago with Eric because he actually was, he qualified to compete in the World Masters Championship for Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, wow.
And so it's in Vegas and I was like, it's only the second time I've been there and the first time I was there, I was underage. And okay. I was like, I need to see Thunder Down Under.
What's Thunder Down Under?
I was like, oh, sorry. I just knew one should never hit the boob like that. Jesus Christ. Thunder Down Under is like Australian men in little dinky outfits dancing.
Okay.
It's like, you know, like the quintessential bachelorette party kind of show, right? It's like,
gotcha.
Like, you know, like muscular men doing things on stage and girls scream. So I, you know, I didn't want to buy expensive tickets. So I literally sat in the nosebleed aisle and I was like, I just want to say I did the thing. So, you know, obviously through most of the show, people are, you know, they bring up bachelorettes and people are like fighting to be on stage or they're all fighting to kind of get touch a boy, so to say. And occasionally what they do is they run through the audience and they'll obviously like do things like gyrate in girls' faces and they lose their minds. And at the end of the show.
Sorry. Sorry, Matthews just like slapped Savoy right across the throat. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. That's kind of a thing.
Ow. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, we're watching the match too. It's important to comment on very, very intense moments. I was actually more thinking about that they was going to like crack her back on her knee. Didn't seem that quite happen. So.
Yeah, no, she was like kind of like holding her and stretching her on her own knee before like the slap.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, which if you're not super flexible on your back is actually not the most pleasant thing to deal with either.
I can imagine, yeah.
But what happened was that right at the end of the show, these men were running around and they actually ran to the back and I wasn't even paying attention. I was just sitting, I turned around, I was giggling at Eric and like next thing you know, I have just like sweaty man ass on my body. Like just sweaty, like thong man bum, like on my lap, like fully like dancing. I'm like, wow. Like I did not expect this experience. So yeah, I would say that's my splash zone story.
It's a good splash zone. Well, I guess good is subjective, but it's a good story. Absolutely.
You know what? It was an experience. It makes for a good story. As you said, and I'll always make it. As my one friend says, you can have type A fun and type B fun. And type B fun's the fun that's not fun in the moment, but you have great stories after.
I like that. I'm going to start using that. Savoy with just hit Matthews with a big knee, and they are both down. Right now, the ref has the opportunity to exercise another kind of 10 count in which both competitors have to get back to their feet, or one competitor has to get back to their feet. Otherwise, it's going to be labeled a draw. Yeah.
So do they have rounds, or is it literally just until one person literally can't fight anymore?
It's pinfall or submission. But yeah, this is one fall to a finish. There's, you know, there's plenty of room for modifiers and gimmick matches and stuff like that. You can do two out of three falls. You can, you know, it's a fictionalized sport. Yeah, so there's, you know, there's plenty of room for imagination and very wacky rules that you can just kind of incorporate that you wouldn't normally use in combat sports.
I love this thing with wrestling where it's just, everyone's just punching each other incessantly. I'm like, very wrestling, right?
Well, that was a wrestling move. That was a good T-bone suplex by Savoy. She's going for the two count. Oh, she gets the two count. I guess spoiled
that
it.
That one I remember. Sorry, I forgot about that. See?
Which one?
The whole like submission with the leg up thing. I should remember that. I have watched some. It's been like a year, which means I need a refresher every single time. Now, I know in a lot of like wrestling, they have storylines and they create these characters, and a lot of times the win's already determined. Do you find that these matches are determined too then? Even though we don't know the audience, they're predetermined, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you know, there's things like shoot wrestling and like and whatnot, but like they're very rare compared to your standard WWE or indie wrestling match. Like it's all storytelling. That's what it is at the end of the day. Yeah. Like we call it sports, but really like it's performing arts. Like
it's a performing art that's very physically demanding.
Very physical. Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But
what was that documentary that was like the one British wrestler? Do you remember that one? Eric watched it with me and I can't remember the name.
Savoy is just stretching her. Is it possible it was about Nigel McGuinness?
No, it was about a female.
Oh, okay. Oh, Paige?
Maybe?
Fighting with My Family?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember that one too, like just even watching that, it was like, yeah, it's like they, you know, especially back in the days, like throwing people on tacks. It's like you actually threw yourself on tacks, like, you know.
Yeah. And like that's still a thing in like deathmatch circles. I'm not a big fan of deathmatch wrestling, you know, to each their own, whatever. Yeah. But
I have sideshow artist friends who like, you know, put nails up their nose and staples their bodies. So I've kind of gotten a little bit like desensitized. There's some that are like that push my limits a little bit, but you know, I've seen some stiff. Oh,
speaking of stiff, that was a hell of a brainbuster by Matthews. We're coming towards the end of this match. Who are you rooting for at this point?
Oh, I don't know.
That's okay.
It's hard to root for anyone when you don't know the characters, you don't know the people as well. Just from like viscerally watching the experience, I feel like. You said Savoy's the challenger, right?
Savoy's the challenger in the purple.
Yeah, I like supporting challengers kind of thing. I like the idea of someone new taking a championship.
Oh,
I feel like
beautiful takedown.
I feel like her attitude's been better this match too. She doesn't seem quite so butthurt about things.
Matthews is definitely playing the heel in this match. Speaking of heels, Savoy is twisting Matthews' heel, but Matthews is kicking out of it. Goes for a backhand. She ducks. What's Matthews going? Oh, she's going to hit a reverse DDT? Nope. Oh, and a two count. Half and half suplex by Savoy.
That suplex looks like a sacrifice almost, how intense it is. You so risk your opponent like flattening you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like if the opponent twists last minute and stuff, like it could go. And that's actually the thing I learned. Like I do appreciate about wrestling is like, it is a two person game, right? Like you have to act like you're competing, but you can't complete half these moves with the flair. If you aren't willing to play along and make it look good. Right. Like I know this from watching jiu-jitsu. I know this from doing judo. Oh, was that a win?
This is actually a running gimmick on our show. Our guest is always like it's like surefire. Our guests are always talking over the finish, but Matthews just hits a schoolboy roll up. She pulled the tights for extra leverage and wins by nefarious means.
Sure. I would not have been able to tell that it was nefarious, but I felt like it was very close.
It was very close. It was a good finish too. It looked like Matthews was trying to put her feet up on the ropes to like get the extra leverage. They were both like a little out of place, but she recovered by like pulling the tights, which is like a tried, tested, and true cheating method in professional wrestling.
Okay. So don't grab each other's clothes is normally not a thing you do.
Yeah, especially when it comes to a pinfall and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was Nicole Matthews versus Nicole Savoy for the ECCW Women's Championship. Maroki, what did you think of the match?
It was entertaining, as I think all wrestling is meant to be. You know, what I was just saying there, like the coordination, I always do appreciate the, you know, people always say, like, even if it's performing arts, like even if everything's set and even, you know, if it's like basically made up matches, it requires an amount, like it requires athleticism. It requires tolerance for pain, no matter how staged it is. And being able to play with your partner and feel and coordinate your partner. Because I was just about to say, like, in, you know, judo and jiu-jitsu, if two opponents were genuinely trying to fight each other, you would just get this match where people are just, like, wiggling back and forth, basically, for most of it, right? Like, you're not going to get in beautiful throws and beautiful, because people are going to be resisting you the entire time. I can tell you that I've basically never been able to get a beautiful throw in a competition setting. Right. If you did, it's because your opponent made a colossal mistake and was just perfectly off balance. And if they didn't do a spectacular break fall, they would have hurt themselves. Right. So, you know, like be able to do it like this, you have to be able to read your opponent's body and have that language and that dialogue with each other, which I always can appreciate. So
right on. Now, putting you on the spot here, what kind of wine pairs nicely with that match we just watched?
What kind of wine pairs nicely? I mean, if I was honest, I'd probably be drinking beer at a match like that.
That's generally my go-to.
I drink beer. And then, you know, if my winning team won, maybe I do a shot of like really cheap whiskey. But I would also have like the good whiskey in the flask that I snuck in that I might like pour myself a nicer glass afterwards. But if I would say if I had wine, chances are if it's a match like that, I would just order whatever they have and drink it out of a plastic cup and have a great time. If I'm sitting at home in front of my TV or if I'm attending my friends' parties, which I have brought wine because that's a thing I do, because why wouldn't I do that? I'm literally a wine geek. I'm trying to think. Because I was going to be like, oh, I like an easy drinking. But I wouldn't. I wouldn't drink an easy drinking drink at like a wrestling match. I'd probably get like a super smoky, earthy red, you know, that's like interesting and funky. Or if it's in the summer, I might bring like, you know, a really crisp white to start because everyone's probably sweating while screaming in a room while eating chips together. and then when I'm finished that, I'll probably switch over to a red or have some more whiskey too. And I say this because one of my friends that I watch with like really loves his whiskey. So we almost always finish the night with whiskey. It just seems like a given. And I love my whiskey too. So yeah, I think that's what I would do. I would have some, if I was at my friend's house, I'd get myself some earthy, smoky red and a crisp white and finish the night with whiskey.
Right on, right on. Where can the audience follow 9 Ounces Please on the internet?
Follow me on Instagram, 9 Ounces Please. If there's any, it's like number 9 and then ounces, please. I'm most active there. I have a Twitter account. It basically exists solely so that no one else will steal 9 Ounces Please. Occasionally I'll just tweet something like really salty and snarky on it. You want it? It's like my less curated self. So I'll be there and I'll be like, it's Friday night. How many glasses of wine am I drinking tonight? I can't even be salty on the spot, but I'll probably say it's like, that's probably the part where I'm just like maybe I should post like a real tweet here today because I own this account. Hi, here's a tweet, right? And I'll put like a GIF of like someone with like a bowl of wine. So yeah, follow me on Instagram, 9 Ounces Please. If you kind of want to know my other personas outside of wines, if you want to see a little bit of art, a little bit of performance, a little bit of me being just like a giant dork, you know, or like gross romantic photos with me and my partner Eric, then my personal Instagram is Mad Gingerbread, literally like an angry piece of gingerbread.
It's my favorite handle on all of Instagram.
So yeah, if you want a little bit of circus, a little bit of goth, a little bit of my music, that's my other account. But yeah, but if you only want like just wineness and nerdiness and occasionally spouting about, I don't know, racism or sexism in wine, then 9 ounces, please, is the way to go.
Maroki, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for the wine recommendation. And thank you for a really, really important conversation that I really wasn't expecting. This was a wonderful episode. Thank you.
Leave it to Maroki to always bring up things that no one is ready to talk about.
I was certainly on the spot, but I'm glad we talked.
No, I really appreciate you, listening to what I have to say and having a really, having really good dialogue around this. And thank you for putting me on the spot for wrestling and enjoying a match. And hopefully I didn't make too much of a fool of myself. But if so, it's all in fun. It's all good.
All in fun. Absolutely. Thanks again.
All right. Cheers.
So like I said earlier, I like a nice adult beverage while I record, but I think I want to start incorporating wine into the mix because I'm vibing. I had a good time and I hope you had a good time listening too. This was a lot of fun. That was Maroki Tong of the 9 Ounces Please wine blog joining me on today's podcast. I really appreciate that conversation. I mentioned it's not really a direction that we often go on Smark and Friends. It wasn't in our usual wheelhouse, but it's not a topic that we aim to shy away from on this podcast either. I'd like to clarify that I agree with everything that Maroki had to say on the challenging topics that we came across. I must admit that those are not conversations I'm accustomed to having. And I recognize that's a very privileged thing to say, but while my social beliefs are very hard left, I do struggle to articulate those thoughts out loud sometimes. Maybe Smark and Friends is a very unlikely platform for such a sounding box, but if challenging subjects come up on this show again, I will never shy away from them. I may stutter and stammer my way through them, but I won't shy away either. I promise that much. Once again, follow Maroki's excellent blog, 9 Ounces Please, most available on Instagram. If you like what you heard, head on over to ratethispodcast.com/smarkandfriends. Leave us a kind word, leave us a couple stars. Means the world. Thank you very much. Follow us on social media. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, we don't have our own page, but we're part of the Two Finger Guns Club Facebook page. You'll follow all the great podcasts that the network produces, including Rocket Man Explores, and Foul Mouth. Thanks for watching Wrestling with Maroki and I. We're back next week. Till then, friends.
This has been a Two Finger Guns Club production. Pew, pew.